The Ensemble podcast is intended for professional financial advisors. This content is created in partnership with our sponsor, NetWealth Investments Limited, ABN 85090 569 109, AFSL 230 975, and is limited to publicly available information. Before acting on any general advice, you should consider whether appropriate and obtain financial advice from a qualified financial advisor. Ensemble does not hold an AFS license and does not provide any financial advice or services or endorse any general advice. If a PDS or IM exists, you should obtain a copy and review it thoroughly before making a decision.
I'm Patrick, Head of Technology at professional services firm Collins SBA. I'm a former financial advisor who just loves solving business problems and creating better client experiences using technology. Join me each week as we unpack the tech on offer to advice professionals, stay on top of tech trends, and help you break free from the analysis paralysis experience when building and maintaining a great tech stack.
Discover a world of advice. Join Matt Heiner, CEO of NetWealth, as he chats to industry professionals and thought leaders on the latest technologies, business models, changing demographic patterns, and general trends impacting wealth management. Listen at netwealth.com.au/between meetings. This ad is presented by NetWealth Investments Limited and does not consider individual circumstances. Seek professional advice and read the relevant PDS to determine if NetWealth is appropriate for you. Past performance is not a reliable indicator of future performance.
Hello, welcome back to another episode of the Ensemble Advice Tech Podcast. I'm Patrick Gardner and I miss Peter Diamantidis. Today, I'm joined by Martin Morris, the founder of Engagement Hub, a platform aimed at enhancing the experience between clients and advisors. Martin will tell us more about the inception of the platform in just a moment, but what he has built is a solution designed to revolutionize the way financial advisors operate, fostering transparent communication, simplifying workflows, and then ultimately providing a more effective and enjoyable advisory experience, always with the client at the center. Simplifying financial advice for clients and enabling advisors to easily articulate and demonstrate the value they add to clients. I started off by asking Martin, what is the oldest piece of technology he still owns, or whether he still uses it?
So you'll probably laugh at me when I answer this, but I do still use a shop calculator that I bought in 1987 when I was at uni.
You're joking.
And I do use it.
30 plus years old. Is that battery powered? Like, is that just work the whole way through?
Tiny little battery, so that's the biggest challenge. I don't use it a lot, so the batteries last fairly long. That's the biggest challenge, is when it's almost like a watch battery.
Yep. All right. No, that's amazing. There's literally a testimonial on your website that says you've created the iPhone for financial services. I think if I received a compliment like that, it'd be very hard for me to focus, and I'd probably just go straight to the wardrobe. Throw on my best pair of blue jeans and a black skivvy, like good old Steve. But when you need to focus and get deep work done, how do you block out distractions?
So, the two times that I really need to be focusing, and the one time is sometimes when I'm sitting at my desk at work, switch the phone off, take everything off the table because focus isn't my strong area. So, at the moment, there's things lying around, I'm all over the place.
Yeah.
I give myself probably an hour at a time, max, and edit. And then these headphones that you see me wearing right now, you could often find me sitting in a coffee shop or a hotel with these headphones on, listening to absolutely nothing but trying to block out the noise and trying to do some work. But focus has never been my strongest area, I've got to say.
Okay, but you're aware of it and you've obviously taken steps to make sure you can focus. That's great. Okay, so Engagement Hub, I'm really keen to jump in and learn more about what you've built and how you've sort of got to this point. Where does Engagement Hub sit in the advice tech space?
Alone is probably the answer that I would give you.
Okay. Yeah.
So the background for this piece of tech is really the fact that I've been a practitioner for the best part of 30-odd years, and technology has evolved immensely. I've seen some really great pieces of software. I use a lot. I'm always ready to experiment and try something else. But what I've found more and more over the last 10 years as regulations up the ante, so every piece of software has been built around compliance. Compliance has been the core and the center of every single piece of technology that I'm finding.
Yep.
And somewhere in this whole roadshow, we've forgotten that there's a client. And I've actually just thought, what about putting the client at the center? And if we give the client a great experience, we do the right things, we're going to tick off all those compliance boxes anyway. So the compliance officers that I've sat down with and shown this to are loving what we're doing, but that's almost a byproduct. It's not the intention. So this is engagement software aimed at creating and enhancing the experience of being client and advisor.
And then I've been told that you've got a group of advisors actively using the software. You're obviously an advisor yourself. You've got your practice. Is that in Sydney?
In Sydney.
It obviously helps when you've got an advisor building tools for advisors. What did version one look like? What was that sort of minimum viable product? And then obviously you've taken that out and added to that over time. But what was that first version of what you built? What did that look like?
Maybe a bit of background is useful right now, because that'll take me to the minimum viable product. So yep. Over the last 8 years, I would say I've been doing a lot of work in South Africa, training South African financial advisors on what I call the old world to the new world transition.
Yep.
Because regulation's coming in a big way in South Africa, but it's nowhere near where we are in Australia. I had a relatively large practice in South Africa. We employed 23 people. I think we had 1.5 billion under management. We looked after 50 or 60 pension funds. So I have a reasonable amount of credibility there, and a whole bunch of the companies that own dealer groups have got me involved in training. And what I've realized is, as I'm showing people templates that I thought were normal,
yep.
The advisors over there were saying, wow, can we have a bit of this? So I was giving them the templates. Yep. I was giving them PDFs all the time. And then somebody suggested to me, why don't you make a hub for these templates? Why don't you put a bunch of these forms, a form for file notes, a form for action items, a form for what we did for you during the course of the year? Why don't you put this onto a site or a portal that people can access it easier? So that was the minimum, that was the route to the minimum viable product, is putting 4 or 5 forms together, which we did. I then started doing a lot of work with advisors there about developing advice philosophies. And I built a lot of tech for myself in Excel, and I was using this in Excel. But what I realized is every piece of Excel was a standalone piece of software. So I started then finding developers and saying, can we put this all in one home? Can each piece talk to each other? Can the asset management piece talk to the insurance piece? Can we, while we're dealing with cash flow, can we see how that impacts the client's goals? So the minimum viable product continues to grow. And the challenge with the software is it never stops. So what exactly. I thought was going to be main game a year or year and a half ago is so far removed from where we are today. And the list and the roadmap is so big at the moment.
Yeah, far out. So obviously there's prioritizing going on there. And you've got a team behind you as well. So I assume you're relaying that feedback pretty quickly, and then changes are being made. So would you say the flagship functionality now is those forms, like the repertoire of forms or those client engagement tools?
That's probably the flagship, because that's where somebody can start tomorrow and within 5 or 10 minutes be using the system really, really efficiently, using 10 or 12 of those forms without any explanation. And I guess that's where that really nice comment from that one advisor in South Africa came from, because he just gave it to his back office and all of a sudden his clients were getting these forms and getting this information. And he sent me that comment, which I said to him, can I throw into the website? Saying that, we've developed a bunch of modules that have become far more exciting than the forms, and things like a values conversation and a really exciting goals conversation where you take the clients through an experience and they move their goals around the screen. And while they're doing that, so the calculator in the background is working things out. We've developed a risk profiling tool. We're about to launch within the next 2 weeks our tasks, our indirective tasks, which you can share with the clients or you can hide from the clients. So the flagship and the starting point was certainly the forms, but I think it's evolved significantly since then.
No, that's great. And then so you mentioned, obviously, you've got the development coming there. And are clients, so they're logging in to interact with what's been assigned to them, or they will be with the tasks, etc. Does that then ping the advisor or the team to say, this client has done this?
Yep.
Or are you now spending most of your time in Engagement Hub from a backstage point of view? Like, how does that sort of work?
So, two quick answers to that. The first one is the email is functionality set up. So, if you or a client make some changes,
yep.
you both have the ability to notify each other via email. So I would get an email from a client to say, Patrick's got onto the system, he's updated, he's put a new form on the system, or he's completed a form. Yeah, then I would log in and do it. Or I can do the same, or I don't need to do the same. What we've actually found is one or two of our advisors are using Iris quite extensively, yep. using Xplan. A couple of the advisors have actually continued to use Iris, which we strongly recommend they do. But the advisor themselves has given up their license, and it's just the administration, the back office that's done it, because they're finding that this is going to be their full-on engagement with the clients.
Amazing. So obviously you've got the Iris integration there. Just from looking at the website and having a quick play around with the online tools, you've got, or the calculators rather. So I think you've got an insurance calculator and a sort of, I wouldn't say basic financial model, but more of a back of the envelope financial model. Are you finding that instead of going the fully fledged Iris modeling tools, that maybe advisors are now going, this really does not matter so much, then actually the client having the clarity of simple inputs and simple outputs, rather than say the client wants to buy a new car in their 15th year of retirement in 2036, and it might make the model fall apart. Like, are you seeing a more simple advice experience when it comes to generating advice, rather than the fully fledged, give me absolutely everything and we'll create this panacea plan that we're going to live by for the next 15, 20 years of retirement?
I'm glad you asked that question. So I could just clarify something. The two tools that you saw on the website, the calculator for the retirement and the insurance, those are, as you say, back of an envelope, pretty picture sort of calculators. Those are not meant to be financial planning tools. Those are what we call lead magnets.
Yep.
So the advisors can take the embed codes, personalize that, put it onto their website, and it's a way of attracting clients. In fact, in August last year, I literally put it on my website probably 3 weeks before, and I picked up an actuary and his wife who were just about to retire. He was playing with a calculator, called me and said, I just want to ask you about some of the assumptions. So I thought, well, is this ASIC? Is this a real client? Who's on the phone?
Yeah. Mystery shopper. Yeah.
Exactly. So I was extremely cautious in my responses. I suggested that he come in and we have a better conversation. Anyway, he came on board. He invested $2.5 million with us. But those are what we call lead magnets. So a potential client could get onto the site, play with that, request a, tips and myths about retirement, tips and myths about insurance. He'll get a very pretty PDF email through to him. The advisor will get notified that a client's been on their website and is interested, and he has the client's contact details and things. We've also subsequently introduced a budget and a balance sheet tool that do the same thing. When it comes to actual financial planning, we do have calculators that do all the detail. So those are not back of the envelope calculators. They do the cash flow projections. They do the goals orientation. And the goals could be 1 year down the road, 20 years down the road. So those calculators aren't designed for.
Okay. But at a bare minimum, obviously, as you mentioned, you've got the lead magnet where it's creating that way for you to reach out to a prospective client with actual context, rather than the typical contact us page on a advice website where you're just calling them and maybe they're putting whatever they want in that rich text or long text box field. But you're actually calling them to discuss, obviously, generally, maybe the results of their inputs of that insurance calculator or the back of the envelope model. But has that been a really great way for you to get context quickly and build rapport rather than starting from scratch every time with that prospective client?
Yeah, so it has. As I said to you, I was really lucky in the beginning. I picked up a really material client.
Yeah.
What I have realized is this is a great way to get clients to engage and to put some context and some meat onto the first conversation. However, as I'm learning, the trick is still to get them to your website in the first place.
Yeah.
So we've got to get them there to play with the tools.
No, obviously that's an ongoing an ongoing challenge. Martin, I wanted to ask you, like, if we went through a typical new client experience and process, at what points throughout would you utilize Engagement Hub?
So if you take a brand new client, so if you consider a prospect possibly got to my website, got referred to me, and then let's say in a best case scenario, you use the insurance calculator or the retirement calculator, you'd give me a call or I would reach out to that particular client and I would say, set up a time to meet with them and I would ask them to complete what we call a financial health report. It literally takes the client no more than 5 to 10 minutes. And it's not really about how much money you've got or what your budget looks like. It's really qualitative things. And it gives me a really good understanding of how the client feels that they're sitting when it comes to three areas of advice, cash flow, wealth management, and contingency. They don't see the outcome of that until we're in the first meeting. And what I often do is I get, assuming it's, let's say, a husband and wife coming, I make them both complete it. And it's fascinating because when they come through, you actually say, really, guys, you're living in the same house and you feel like that. But it's a great experience. And it's a great starting point because you can very clearly say and see where the clients are feeling confident and where the clients are feeling insecure about their finances. It's a great place to hone in. We then have what I call a discovery sheet. And those are the only two pieces of tech that I use in my first meeting.
Yep.
So I literally pull out a discovery page and we put it on the screen and I ask the client a whole bunch of questions. And many of these questions I've learned from coaches over the years and programs that I've been on, things like, if we're meeting 3 years from now, what needs to happen for you to feel that these 3 years have been successful? What's keeping you awake at night? But a whole bunch of really easy qualitative things. I'm typing it in. Clients feel really, really engaged. And I'm getting information that I would not normally have got. Ask a few more questions of the client. I've got a values conversation that we have. Following that, the meeting typically concludes. I let them ask any questions. I explain to them that meeting is really about me understanding them, about them understanding me and asking questions. And then I was figuring out if there's a fit. What I previously used to do is I used to send my clients a very detailed 3-page or 4-page letter of engagement that I wanted to contract with them. What I discovered is the better the quality of that letter of engagement, the slower the turnaround time with the client signing it is. They almost felt stupid if they didn't ask their brother or their sister or their mother or their accountant, should they sign it. I've now put together what I call a proposal form, which is a 1-page form. So everything I have, the intention is to fit onto 1 page. So it's a 1-page form that talks about their purpose. What is the reason that they want financial advice? Another block talks about their goals. We then look in the third quadrant about the strategies that we would explore, not the strategies we would implement, but the strategy we might explore. And the very last comment looks at what the fees would be to engage with us. Now transform that where the client would feel very stupid if they went to somebody and asked somebody to explain a very simple 1-page picture. So we're finding that I send that through to the clients and we're getting a response pretty much the same day or the next day. Clients are fantastic. You've got me. Let's move ahead. We've got file notes, which is one of the forms, which I'm using all the time. And I've got a form called action items, which we're using all the time. When the clients then come through for the next meeting, when we're now starting to really gather information, we have what we call a family tree. And if you envisage a typical fact find that us as an industry do, it's got everything. As you create family members so they grow up, they grow on the screen and you've got the family tree coming out on the screen. You click on it, it asks you the date of birth, contact numbers, the employment details, all of that. And you're completing that there and then. We have the values conversation, which is a tool, and we have a goals conversation. And we also have a risk profiling tool. So I often ask the client to complete the risk profiling tool prior to that meeting. But if not, we just put it up in the meeting and they complete it there and then. So those are the initial pieces prior to the engagement. Once we do engage and we've put a plan together, and I'm talking about my practice, the one or two of the other practices are using more forms than I am actually.
Okay, yep.
But once we put the plan together, so I generate an SOA, and I'm using Xplan to generate my SOAs, I put together what I call a one-page plan, and that goes at the front of the plan. So I say I'm doing it, but I've actually become quite lazy, and my para plan is actually doing it for me. We've got that, and we've got a form that we call the what form. And the what form, very, very simply, in three circles, summarizes every problem that we're looking to resolve. And then we've now taken the client through the presentation of the SOA, and obviously the file notes are happening all the way through. Every sort of meeting, I'm doing a file note, which, by the way, I email through to the clients post a meeting, It's quite a pretty sort of looking file note. And then when it comes to the end of the year and we give out the annual renewal contracts and the FDSs, we've created a what we did for. So it's nice. A very simple way of saying, you know, we did investments for the client, and what do the investments mean? That might mean rebalancing, it might be selecting funds, it might be selecting equities. It's a very simple way of a client actually saying, okay, well, these guys did something for me.
So an FDS with context rather than user fee.
FDS with some pictures.
Nice.
And those are the forms I'm using all the time. So the calculators, the forms I'm using all the time. There are probably 10 or 12 other forms that I use sporadically. And I have one or two advisors that are saying to me, why are you not using this? Why, you know, this works really well, but not every form is appropriate for every practice.
Yep. No, that's brilliant. And just at the start of that process with do you refer to it as the financial health check? So you've got that and obviously your discovery sheet. Like even that in itself is valuable and could actually be charged for rather than all of the other tools as well. Like at a bare minimum, you're delivering value even before that first meeting. And I really like the way that you're sort of building that suspense and showing the results of their financial health check in the meeting rather than as soon as they've done the form. It actually probably creates a more of a reason for them to show up to the appointment as well, or for both of them to show up as well. So the client and the client partner, that's brilliant. And what you've sort of described there is this is silver bullet territory in terms of financial planning software. I think with the exception of SOAs in their current form, obviously before QAR comes to fruition in whatever way that comes, but we're actually probably on the precipice of ditching traditional financial planning advice tools altogether. And what I'm hearing is you can probably run your business with Engagement Hub being the core part of the tech stack, or at least 80 to 90% of where both yourself as the advisor or the practice and the client sort of live. So you've created a unified front stage and backstage experience.
So we really have, if QAR comes in, it will be utopia for me.
Yep.
Because what we're not generating at the moment is an advice document that the legislation currently wants. So we're not generating a statement of advice at the moment. We're not generating a record of advice at the moment.
Okay.
But we're showing the clients really, really simply what their advice looks like, what they need, and why they need it. Within the portal as well, we have the ability to disseminate information to see when the clients have read this. And that's what my compliance officer is loving, is the fact that he can come in and actually see when the clients have downloaded a form or not downloaded a form. And clients can upload to us, we can upload to the client.
Yeah. No, that's brilliant. So you're essentially ticking off, at least in some regard, things like informed consent rather than just sort of fingers crossed or having a manual file note that says that you handed them the FSG, for example, like they actually physically downloaded it.
Correct. And I guess you hit on a very good point there. And I guess one of my frustrations is regulation has done a whole bunch of good things. We know
that
it's also complicated life and made this an incredibly unpleasant journey for most clients.
Yep.
And the longer an advice document, the more opportunity there is to hide information.
Yes.
So when something sits on one page, there's nowhere to hide.
Exactly,
and
right.
So when it comes to informed consent, I think we're adding some value over there.
Amazing. No, thank you for sharing that. That's just brilliant. I think looking forward, You obviously mentioned the roadmap on tasks and things of that nature. So further enhancing that client engagement, workflow and experience. Is there anything that might not be on the roadmap yet, but say it might be 2, 5, 10 years time that you would say, gosh, I would love to have this sort of functionality in the tool, that maybe it's not possible right now. Maybe it involves AI or something like that. Is there anything or any point where you mentioned Utopia, even post QAR, I assume the development won't stop. Are there things that you're thinking about that are sort of blue sky areas of development and functionality?
So the only thing that I'm really, really, really thinking about at the moment is how we can get away from anybody needing to type into this computer to get away from using the keyboard. So as me and you are talking right now, and I know that technology exists, I just can't get to everything right now.
Yep.
But if I'm sitting and having a conversation with the client, I would love nothing more than just to have that conversation, to ask the questions, let my software record the answers. That's something that we will certainly explore over time. I was listening to an interview probably about 18 months ago. In fact, the guy that's been mentoring me down this entire software journey insisted that I listen to a Steve Bezos interview. And he's asked the question to say, given that technology is changing so rapidly and things are different from one day to the next, if you were starting again right now and you were developing some technology for a business that you wanted to be still be in existence in 10 years' time, what would you do?
Yep.
And I thought the response was brilliant. And he said, I wouldn't try and second guess what's changing because we just don't know that.
Mm-hmm.
I would try and figure out what's still going to be the same. And I would build for that. And I looked at the advice industry and I thought, what is going to be the same? We're always going to have great engagement with our clients. The experience is going to be the only differentiator because regulation is forcing everything to look more and more vanilla, things are looking the same. So you've got to create a great client experience, and compliance is always going to be a big issue. So how do we create tools that tick those boxes in a advisor and client-friendly manner?
Definitely. I guess the next question is, where do I sign, Martin? Like, it sounds like Utopia is around the corner. How can a practice or an advisor get involved and learn more about Engagement Hub? Can they go onto your website? Can they sign up? What does that look like?
So at this point in time, the best thing is get onto the website.
Yep.
Drop us a note. We will be in touch with you really, really quickly. We are actively looking for advisors right now. We're on ground floor, and we'll onboard you. It's a really, really simple process, and I have no doubt that you will get some benefits pretty much immediately.
Yep.
And we're in the early stages, so we're looking for advisors, and our pricing will reflect that at the moment.
Yep, fantastic. Well, Martin, thank you so much for sharing all things Engagement Hub with us. We'll obviously put a link to the website in our show notes, as well as maybe your LinkedIn or how to get in touch with you. I'm sure that will be a point of interest. And all the best. And I can't wait to see where this takes us.
Patrick, thanks a million. Thanks for the opportunity to chat to you.
Beautiful. Thanks, Martin.